Canada's women will be hosting a major tournament on home soil, the FIBA Americas, with a berth in the upcoming Olympics on the line, and Canada will open up against Puerto Rico 6:30 Sunday night at the Saville Center. And best way to get the tickets, there are a few remaining. You can go to ticketmaster.ca. And the best part about that is that Mejo will be in attendance on Sunday. So you can see Mejo live in person. So he might be doing a Taylor Swift rendition at halftime. We'll see. We shall see. We're going to talk a little basketball about that, some training, some pro Europe ball. Steve Sura, long time playing pro in Europe, of course, following your father Paul's footsteps, and Derek Lampshire from the base by River Valley Health joins us again. I know you you train, Steve. Jens, how you doing?
Doing good, Jay. Thanks.
Good. Thanks for having us.
Steve, you're a free agent right now. Quickly, before we get into the training factor, how does free agency work in European ball? Is it like a big day where everybody signs and then you kind of have to wait? Is it drawn out? How does it go? And how long are most contracts in Europe pro basketball?
Most of the contracts that you'll deal with will be 1 year. Again, if you're lucky, you'll have 1 year plus an option, 2 years if they really trust you. For a lot of guys, you're waiting through the summer, and that's part of the challenge and what a lot of people don't talk about. You have to prepare, train, get in the gym, make sure you're in shape, and you don't know where you're going. So it's a challenging part of the game to have the mentality of, I just have to be ready. So I have to train properly, I have to eat properly, I have to get in the gym, get my shots up. But it could be in Russia, it could be in Romania, it could be in France, it could be anywhere. You just have to be ready.
Now, you were in Switzerland last year, and then you had the option and you opted out. You felt like it wasn't a place where there was just a lot of dedication to winning. What's the best league you've played in Europe?
I would have to say Romania. It was a very, very interesting experience culturally, quite different than what you're used to in Canada day by day. But for basketball, it was fantastic. You're dealing with a lot of former Yugoslavia players, a lot of imports from Serbia, Croatia. Even the Romanian locals were quite talented. And then they're also bringing in good Americans. It's a league that really is becoming stronger and stronger as a whole throughout Europe in European competition. For myself, it was great because they like guys who can shoot, and that's what I do well. So it was a place that I was able to show what I could do. And then also, too, they like guys that can work. They have an older mentality of you work, you work, you work, and you don't rest. And it kind of stems from their Eastern Bloc, Serbian, Yugoslavia mentality with sports of you always have to be working, otherwise you're becoming weak. And I liked that mentality. It was challenging to adapt to the culture at times, but as far as basketball, it was great.
So in the off season, how many shots a day are you taking? Because you're a shooter, like you're a big 3-point guy.
Now I don't shoot as obsessively as I used to. When I was in high school, it was, you know, you have to make 1,000 shots. You have to do
a day.
A day. You have to do that daily, where you have to challenge yourself to really fall in love with the boring part of it. If I'm going to shoot the same shot hundreds and hundreds of time until I feel it's just a matter of my body takes over and you don't have to think about it. Now that I've done that stuff and you kind of build up the muscle memory, now it's a little easier to, I'm going to get in the gym, I'm going to be really focused on specific repetition that I need as opposed to a high volume. You still have your days where, you know what, I need to just get 500 makes in. And you want to just do that.
So it's so when you say 1,000 shots, that's ones you make. You're not taking 1,000, and if you make 800, great. You got to make 1,000.
Yeah, one of the worst things you hear about in basketball is, "Wow, I shot 2,000 shots today." Yeah, but how many did you make? You know what I mean? Like, you made 300. That's really not that good. So yeah. You'll hear guys will say like, "I'm on the gun," and it tracks your makes, and you shot 32%, man. That's not really that good. So it's one of those things where you get in and you have to remember what you're missing, but you have to be really, really aware of, I'm making these shots from these areas on the floor at this percentage. And if I'm not doing a good enough job, then I have to find a way to increase that.
Steve, sir, joining us, a pro basketball player in Europe, Derek Lampshire from River Valley Health. Now, you train, Steve, you've trained NHL guys. You know, you train football guys, train track, you train Olympians. What's the big difference? What's the focus in basketball that's maybe different in training from other sports?
Well, the biggest difference working with is the size. They're a lot longer, so their mechanics. The basketball players that we've worked at elite level, I think basketball players are very athletic. You know, they try playing basketball, you got to jump, and so there's some athleticism there. but the length. So if you, you know, we talked about core stability. Well, there's a long way from the core to the ground with most of these players. You know, like even, I don't know if Steve is considered tall in basketball, but he's taller than me. Like in hockey, 6 foot's a solid person, right? Six foot's small. We've done some work with the ploofs and stuff like that. And I had a picture
they're
with
six,
them.
Six, four, and five.
Yeah. Well, I look like a munchkin. You know what I mean? So, so like that core stability and that glute activation, stuff like that. So really ultimately the length, and in fact, the ploofs started laughing one day, you know, a while back, and they're like, you use length a lot with that. Well, because you guys are tall. You don't understand how tall you are. So really ultimately the size of them, you know, just different mechanics and the jumping mechanics. Jump mechanics is very, it's just different mechanics, right?
Now, when an athlete like Steve or most basketball, they are taller, I assume that, and I could be wrong, they have a longer core, and do they have like longer glutes? Is it harder to control those?
You are correct up until the longer glutes part. Okay. Yeah, but the longer core, there's that core. And because I've talked about breathing and posture, and Steve said something about the 1,000 shots and repetition, and you got to do the boring stuff right. You got to be committed to the boring, I guess, is what Steve said. That's what the training is, too. You got to be committed to the boring, you know what I mean, to become awesome. And in basketball, you know, it's easy to, you know, you look at the best shooters, Steph Curry, whatnot, Steve Kerr, you know, they're relaxed. They have that posture. And if you don't, because it is a long way up, I've talked about in previous shows with you, Jay, is if you're disconnected, so if you have an upper body, lower body, which doesn't work the core, then you can't shoot properly. And Steve would attest to this, as opposed to getting that connection. So that length is an issue. There's so many basketball players that are just so tight, like their mobility is a big issue because their hip flexors are jumping all day. So they're just tight everywhere. So that core, ultimately the core is the biggest challenge because of that length. You know what I mean?
Now, Steve, being a shooter, a lot of people watch basketball. Oh yeah, he's got to have great hands, but really most of your shooting starts at your base, right? At the fountain with your feet and your legs. How has your training evolved to allow you as you get older to be as, I guess, conditioned as you were when you were younger?
It's changed in that as you get older, everybody knows you can shoot the ball and you have to be able to make a shot with a split second of opening or opportunity. So you have to train to get your feet set, get your body square, have your base right so that when you get the ball, I just have to go up and my body can take over. The difference of that is when you're younger, you might need a little more time. The defense might be a little bit slower, so I can take maybe just even a second to set up the way I need to. When you get older and you play against better athletes, stronger guys, longer reach, if you're not able to get that shot off quick, then you're not going to get a shot. So you have to train with that mentality of I need to make sure that whatever I have to do, be it with my feet, my balance, my eyes, I have to be set so that I can get this off as quickly as possible, but also with accuracy.
And that's very different than in hockey because hockey's very much on one leg a lot of the time. So you do a lot of one-legged drills, Derek. So when you set up for Steve and you talk about, so let's say we have the core, we have the glutes, and we got the lats activated. So that's all started. The training for a basketball guy, I'm guessing, is, like, I know hockey's a lot of leg focus. You need all your strength there. But it's a different type of thing because it's explosive, it's jumping. How does it vary from hockey to a basketball guy, specifically in that lower trunk training?
Well, and once again, that length becomes an issue because a lot of their legs are so long, you know what I mean? So some of the mechanics of a squat, it's so simple to load into your knees. I've talked about that previously, but if you load into your knees, I think from my experience, you get a lot of basketball players with knee issues, so on and so forth. So that mechanics of jumping. Hockey's a whole different breed because skating's not normal. It's normal to Canadians because we grew up with it, but it's not normal. If you think of the mechanics of skating, it's such a different movement. Basketball encompasses, you know, jump, run, throw type thing, you know, or you know, jump, run, throw. And really the length of the athlete, because Steve could probably attest to this, when we get into some of that basic foundation and really getting the brain involved, because what Steve is saying, to get really good at shooting a basketball, you just have to shut down and it just becomes autopilot, right? So when our biggest difference with our training system is we don't tell you what to do, we teach you what to do, so you build that training system so that you don't have to think about it. Some people, do I need to think of the core? No, you don't. We'll build it in, so you just initiate it. And then when we work with these guys, we look at squat patterns, because ultimately that squat is a power position. So jumping makes sense. It's a down low with the basketball, no one thinks of basketball as being physical. I've never played, but it looks extremely physical. These guys are huge, so it's extremely physical. So that base position, and if you can control that, when we start working on squat patterns, instantly they want to come to the knees. And I think it's because those levers are just everything so longer. But once you fix that, all of a sudden a guy like Steve's like, hey, I can jump a little higher. I can move a little quicker. And that's the difference at his stage. You just get one step ahead. And if you get one step ahead, you're better than the guy beside you, right?
You're not in your head when you talk, Steve, about loading on your knees.
No.
Was it a tough thing to get out of?
Very much so. Last year, I've had the privilege to work with River Valley for the last two summers when I've been home. And in the beginning, when we did the building the base, learning how to have your core turned on.
You're bored
breathing,
stiff, aren't you?
Well, you're thinking.
Rattled.
This, yeah, you're thinking, how is this going to transition to my sport? And it was amazing because I remember saying to one of their trainers, like, I don't really know if I'm doing this all correctly. You tell me I am, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, in a day or two, it just clicks. And you all of a sudden see how on the court I'm moving better. I'm more balanced. My chest is up. I'm stronger in positions where in the past I was being pushed off balance. And I've told Derek this and the other people at River Valley, the last year I never felt better than this.
How old are you now, Steve?
I'll be 33 in September.
33. So, you know, you're a guy, you know, you played at, I know we have a lot of your Ross Shep alumni texting in the show, shouting out. So, obviously, you know, you've been playing pro now for basically 10 years.
Yeah, just about. This was my eighth season that I just finished.
And so to be that much stronger at this stage is rare, right? Yeah. Usually a lot of the guys, you kind of reach your peak, but a lot of it's just the training because most athletes... And Derek's talked to this. He's trained NHL guys who are in the NHL. They're in the best of the best league. And they still didn't know how to activate their glutes properly. Yeah.
It's the crazy part about it because you played sports. And I've been lucky because I've worked with some guys in Vegas and Florida at these training facilities where they're telling you this and you're telling you that. And I'm feeling, all right, it's good. I guess I just get under the bar and move it. For me, I haven't been the quickest guy. I've never jumped the highest. So in order for me to be efficient in basketball, I've had to make sure that every step that I take, it counts. I can't waste motion and I can't waste any of that because guys will catch me. With a place like River Valley that's been so helpful for me, they've added a step for me. And it's weird being able to say I feel better at 32 than I did at 24, but it's the truth. And it's an exceptional thing because, man, if you're a 16, 17-year-old kid that is now at a time where I can correct this stuff easier than a 32-year-old guy,
yeah,
what an exciting opportunity. You know, I mean, it really is amazing the stuff that they do and how it translates to my sport, other sports, everything.
So you've always been a shooter. Steve Sir joins us as well as Derek Lamshire from the base presented by River Valley Health. You've always been a shooter with the added speed and maybe jumping more. Do you go inside now or are you banging on the boards more?
I'm still chucking. But yeah, I'm still, I mean, the thing that it helps more than anything, I'm never going to be a guy that's living on the rim or anything like that. But what it does help is using your shot as your weapon of, okay, I can catch and shoot it. But now everyone's flying at you. Everyone's coming at you expecting it to shoot it. Now I can put it down. One of the biggest things I think in basketball is as a shooter, it's that first dribble where I'm going to try and create space for my defender. And the biggest thing is going to be you're going to take a hit to create that space. So if I get the shot fake and I'm about to push out, we're going to hit bodies. Am I going to continue through him or is he going to make me go to the side and then he can catch up and the play's dead? This year I felt I did something better than I ever did before was I could take that hit and just continue. And there wasn't a break in momentum. There wasn't a shift to the side. I could get through that. And now I'm into a different area where I can either create a shot for myself or create a shot for somebody else.
What was the most difficult thing for you in this new training to, I guess, grasp and learn how to do?
Keeping my core on at all times. The most simple stuff. Once you build the base, the other stuff just starts to make more sense because the foundation's already there. Activating my glutes, activating my core, working from my lats, opening my back up when I'm doing sumo squats and hip activation because so much of basketball is pound, pound, pound. I'm running, I'm doing this, I'm hunching over. So there's a lot of stuff I'm not using that can really benefit me if I actually learned how to turn on. And that's been the great thing about River Valley is they're telling me, look, if you do this, this is how it translates. Who wouldn't want that? So that was the hardest part is realizing like, man, it's a very big lesson in humility of, okay, I play basketball, I've done this and I've done that, but man, I have so much that I need to work on and can improve at. But again, one of the many things that River Valley does so well is, okay, we understand that, we'll walk you through it. and then here's our endpoint. You're going to be really happy with what you are at the
end. Yeah, one thing. One day I was at Seville, and my kids are doing a gymnastics class. I just walked down, and there's a basketball camp going on, and they're doing jump shots, you know, like hockey camps and whatnot. And it was interesting because I come from a mechanics background. If you can master, like Steve keeps saying, the base, the mechanics, the foundation, then the rest. Steve's a great athlete, but it takes him to another level. You get it's like working on the car. If you tune up the car, it's going to run better, going to run better. And I was sitting there, and maybe the age of kids were maybe 10 to 12 or something like that, and none of them could jump properly. So they're all working on the technique of shooting, but the fundamental of jumping wasn't addressed, right? So so to me, looking at it differently, I'm not going to tell you how to shoot a basketball because I don't know how to shoot a basketball, but I know how to jump. So then we know how to jump. So we look at that foundation, and then all of a sudden now you can do better at basketball.
What do most kids do wrong when they jump?
They knee load. Like, so I talked about to do a proper foundational, probably easiest to understand on the radio is they don't activate their core. And that's impossible to take and, I don't understand that. But it's easy to become, when you jump, your movement should initiate in a hip movement. So it's called a hip hinge.
Yeah.
So you should almost, if you're going to sit in a chair, you should come backwards, correct?
Yes.
If you jump, you will always go forward. So the knees will take over and you'll go forward. Try it. Just sit in a spot and jump. What started first? Did my knees bend or did my hips move? I almost guarantee everybody their hips will move first, certainly at a young age. And I think that's why there's such a propensity for knee injuries at that developmental age.
You meant their knees will move first, not their hips, right?
Their knees will move first. So I think that's why there's such a propensity for knee injuries in soccer and basketball and whatnot. So yeah, their knees will move. Yeah.
In studio, European pro basketball player Steve Sir joined us. Also, Derek Lampshire from the base by River Valley Health, talking basketball and training and all sorts of different things. And, of course, the FIBA Americas. And, Steve, I know obviously basketball is huge for you. I do have to ask you the one question. Do you still rock elastics on your wrists and you'd smack when you miss? Do you still do that?
No, because my wife makes me take them off now. So.
Oh, really? It was like self-punishment. You'd have the elastic, and if you missed a shot, you would snap yourself. Okay.
Thanks for whoever that was.
Yeah, that was Merckx. I don't know. That's a classic little. Man, you must have had some good little welts after a while.
That's how you learn to shoot, man. Yeah. You don't want to do the welts on the arms as much as you like to just make the
shot.
No,
I get that. So. That makes sense. That's kind of unique.
Yeah, idiot.
Yeah.
The FIBA Americas, when, as a Canadian basketball player, you're playing in Europe for the last 8 years, and you just kind of see the growth of the Canadian game now. We see it in the NBA from so many number one overall picks recently, and just players starting to be legitimate, not just Steve Nash, but now we could probably say there's close to 10 real contributing Canadians in the NBA. Like Tristan Thompson had a phenomenal year in Cleveland, and now we see the women and, from Edmonton, the Plouffe sisters, the source, we kind of saw Kia Nurse, maybe a little bit of a coming out party for her at the Pan Am Games. And how good is the FIBA Americas for people who maybe don't know? How big of a deal is this?
It's about as big a deal as you could ask for local basketball. Again, you're talking about a team that just won the Pan American Games, and they practice in Edmonton. They work out in Edmonton. They're here every summer. They're a part of the basketball community now. I think this is their third summer around. And also, too, for a local perspective, they have two girls that came up and developed their game in Edmonton, played community league, played high school in Edmonton, and now they're part of one of the elite national teams in the world. So for people, I think you get a chance to, one, come see Canada. And I mean, that's great because these are the girls that are right in your backyard training. You see at the Saville Center, and you get a chance to see them compete. Not only that, they're competing against the best teams in the Americas. So you're competing against a Cuba, and you're competing against a Brazil that has a lot of WNBA players, a lot of girls that are playing in international markets, at playing at very high levels. These are all teams that are going to be competing and have the talent to play in the Olympics. And this is here in Edmonton. So, again, what an opportunity for basketball enthusiasts, for casual fans who maybe want to learn a little bit more, and then also, too, for impressionable young players to come see an example. Because one of the things you might hear is, oh, it's women's basketball. No, it's basketball. It's regardless of that. Like myself, Jermaine Buckner, and a few other college players in the city, we went and played against the national team on Tuesday. It's basketball. It's not women's basketball. It's some people might carry some sort of negative connotation with. they can play. They're smart. They're aggressive. They're well coached. They're skilled. That's basketball. So again, what a wonderful opportunity to come see them play right on the Saville court.
Speaking of the next generation of young guys and gals, of course, I think the women's game obviously has taken huge strides. Mm-hmm. The young guys from maybe when you played at Ross Shep till now, how big of a difference is it?
There is a difference. There's so much more that's available to players now than there were then. Obviously, with the influence of social media, you're able to have game film up online immediately. You can show workouts immediately to coaches, to people who might be interested in that. You see some kids that are able to do things physically that even 10, 15 years ago you weren't seeing as much of. But there's still things about the game that are the same. You still have to be able to make shots. You still have to be able to play within the framework of a team. You still have to be coachable. And I know those things don't change, say, for local players who are guys and girls being evaluated by colleges, being evaluated by coaches. That stuff remains the same. Are you coachable? Are you willing to work within a system? Are you improving as a player from year to year? So it's been interesting to see the local growth in the city because, again, things are available that just weren't before. You have, if you're a local girl player, you can go watch the senior women's national team practice. You can see right in front of you what these girls who are the best in our country are doing. You didn't have that before. We were lucky growing up because we had a great U of A team to watch, and with Don Horwood's best teams and seeing players like Greg DeVries or Nick Maglesko and guys like that when we were young, to see them at camp and how they worked. That was the best thing for us, and we wouldn't have had it any other way. But now you're not just talking about a great local university team. You're talking about a fantastic national team. So the things that are available to younger players now, there's a lot of exciting opportunity for them to learn, to grow, to develop, and to follow the example of, say, the national team. See what they're doing. Learn from them. Take that example and see how it can motivate and inspire you.
Steve Sir joins us, Derek Lampshire from River Valley Health. Now, Derek, the Plew sisters, Catherine and Michelle, they were in studio earlier this week, and I know that they train with you when they're in town. And, you know, tall girl, 6'4". Catherine plays the number 5. She's more of a center, different skill set than Michelle, who made the Olympic team the last time around and likely going to make it again, both of them this time. And they're 22, so, you know, a decade younger than Steve. And just the difference maybe that you've seen in training basketball and just over the last 5 years, how many more talented kids are coming and just the skill sets that they offer compared to maybe the people you trained a decade ago?
Well, yeah, I've done a lot of work with Steve's dad, Paul Sir, and we opened up a relationship and 'cause he noticed a decline in the athleticism of their, you know, and over specialization, you know, like playing 6 days a week of basketball. So that athlete development and a lot of our training is focused on is building a better athlete. So, you know, so many people, okay, I'm a basketball player, I need to do basketball drills. And no, everybody's the same. Like if you're, you know, a hockey player, basketball player, baseball player, we've done some work with junior hockey. We had a group, we had a baseball player and a hockey player in the same group and a hockey group because they're the same foundation. As you get further down, you get that specialization. So really building the best athlete. The biggest difference, and I can say this with Steve sitting beside me, is Steve, the 32-year-old, the Plouf sisters, using the Plouf's example, just they don't have as much bad habits. I'm not saying Steve had, mm-hmm. some bad habits, yes. But so really changing some things with the Plouf's, they just never were taught properly. So they have some athleticism. The nice thing is working. You know, you're like, well, I made the Olympic team and all this stuff. Well, yeah, because you're very athletic. You worked your tail off. You know, you have a skill set. But this is the tangible to make you better. And at 22, even better, you could have got your hands on the 14-year-old, right? Because there's a template to learn. Or the 8-year-old and learn some athlete development. But the 22-year-old hasn't learned some bad habits. So within that week of something not working, we can fix that in the week and get them ready to recover from an injury or make them bigger, faster, stronger, whatever. Someone like Steve is like, okay, thank God, thank goodness we have all summer to fix this because mm-hmm. there's some bad retraining there, right?
So yeah. Now, for basketball, if you're training the number 5, the center, yeah. to a guard. Now, I know the basic foundation, lats, glutes, core, you get all that activated. As you start to move up the ladder and get a little bit more specialized, what's the big difference between footwork or training for a center compared to a point guard?
Well, obviously, speed and agility drills. There's different, you know, like a point guard, you have to be quicker, I think. Is that okay to say? So a lot of lateral drills and one-legged transitional and have to be quick, whereas that down low person, you have to be really strong in your base, no positional sense. So you have to still be, because every athlete has to be quick. Doesn't matter if you're down low, outside, defense, big defenseman, little forward. You have to be quick, but it's different quickness involved. So you have to have that, what we always call a twitch. You always have to have that twitch foundation. So that's that neurologic, the brain-body connection, and be able to respond it very quickly. And the biggest difference is that center, using this example, you might have a little bit more strength-based twitch, as opposed to that guard might have a little bit more speed-based twitch. It's
so
just variance.
How do you activate or improve the switch or the twitch for a player?
Yeah, we could ask Steve. The core, honestly, it all comes back. Because you can't. I did some work with an athlete a few weeks ago. Needed to get twitchy. Felt slow. Worked at a different facility. Needed to get twitchy. And if you don't have that core, that neutral core, we talked about it off the air here. It sometimes get frustrating with the athletes because the athletes are trained to do more, work harder. And a lot of to get the core better, you have to work less in a way because you have to get that brain connection. That's why a lot of our training, we do a lot of fitness with core activation, because as you get tired, every athlete, you have to be tired, because you might be able to hold a plank for a minute, bang right there. But now let's do a little bit of intervals on the bike and do it. And then, whoa, what just happened here? That's sport. That's Steve working hard down low, outside, putting those three pointers up, snapping that wristband that he likes to snap. That's awesome. Anyways.
Yeah, you're going to bring one of those into the gym next time.
Thanks. Was that Merckx?
I'm going to three on my wrist next time.
Thanks, Merckx. But so that twitch foundation really comes to that core, because a good way to think of it is that core, so I would say from the collarbone or the clavicle to the pelvis. So that's basically your core. Everyone just thinks of your abs. No, it's the lats. You said it, blah, blah, blah. And if that core acts as your pillar, then you can, and think of it as putting an electric shock through your body. If that pillar can maintain stability, then an electric shock can move your arms and legs in a twitchy aspect. Mm-hmm. So that's really a good way to think of it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully no one knows, I've had an electric shock go through me. I've felt that before. But just assume that's what it would feel like.
Yeah, I would hope not. That would not be a good thing.
That would be a bad day.
A few people do, it seems that are, I think there's one guy who's been hit by lightning like 10 times, so he knows how to attract it for sure. quickly for you, when do you think you'll sign back in Europe? What's the deadline? I don't even know. Is there a timeline, a deadline for European soccer basketball?
Usually training camps start to begin in the next few weeks in Europe. Again, this is the tough part of European basketball that a lot of people don't spend a lot of time talking about, is now you're getting down to it. Training camps are getting closer. It's hard not to get a little stressed. It's hard not to get a little bit envious when you see other guys getting jobs. But again, this is the part of the gig, is you just have to be prepared. For me, I'm really fortunate because I get to work with Derek and the fantastic people at River Valley, because I know when an opportunity does come, I will be very prepared, because there aren't a lot of basketball players who get the chance to train in this sort of manner. I'm really lucky to have a chance to have friends like Jermaine Buckner in the community, who's still playing and who's still able to train with me. And then also getting to know new people who are younger than me, like Michelle and Catherine, who we're able to get into the gym and train with as well. So again, when the opportunity has come, you just have to be prepared. I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks that'll be what happens. But until then, you just have to kind of put your head down and make sure you're doing everything you can control.
Will you be, I'm guessing you'll be taking in a few of Canada's games?
I will definitely be taking in a few of Canada's games, if not all of them. For me, I'm really excited to see them play. The Pan American games were fantastic, but seeing their process over the last 3 years of how they've been building to something like this is extremely exciting. Having them around and seeing what they do with local players and how available they are and how kind they are to the kids who come and watch them practice, who approach them after practices, after their games, and just how gracious they are within the community. It's hard not to get 100% behind that and want to see them succeed to the utmost degree. With Michelle and Catherine being on the team as well, it adds that local flavor of you want the local girls to go play in the Olympics, and you want them to represent Canada, because you know they've earned it and they've done all the right things to get there. So I can't wait for them to tip off and play. It's going to be awesome.